at a fundamental level, their brain is changed. And as teachers, we get to come alongside them and understand what's happening and then help them to heal and to grow. And at a fundamental level, their brain has changed because of the life experience. And we get to be a part of helping their brain function through that and heal from that, or learn how to compensate it.
Yeah. And like just this idea of like parents need to be better.
Yeah.
It's not helpful, and it's not going to do anything that will position kids to learn. But what can help is as teachers, if we begin recognizing some trauma responses. Sometimes the behaviors we see in our classrooms are confusing and frustrating. An article in a local newspaper opened our conversation about understanding the way trauma changes the brain. So punitive responses and blaming parents won't help position students to learn. We talk about looking at behavior through a lens of stress responses. This is Sticky Hope. Becca, you sent me a news article from like a local paper.
Yeah.
Follow it on Facebook. So you sent me this article, and the article is called, I wrote it down here, it was about the way school administrators are, and it was, quote, working to curb student behavior. So I think probably that was part of the reason why you're sending it to me, but also because of the comments that were being left on this Facebook post.
Yeah.
And I think both of us were like, oh, like this is kind of the way that we're seeing kids and the dysregulation. So you and I, our lens when we see kids dysregulate is we understand that they're giving trauma responses. But I think this article, and we'll link the Facebook feed here in the show notes, so people, if you want to look at it too, can see, we're like, oh, this is kind of like just a different way to see things. And so in like that most relevant feed, there were people commenting like, hey, I work in behavior, and like schools, they need to kind of call the parents and have the parents come in. And kind of it was this thought of, if parents would discipline their kids more, we wouldn't be having this behavior.
Yeah. And I was thinking how shocking it was to see parents being blamed by community members, because I'm so used to this narrative of community members blaming the school, right? Schools aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Schools are allowing these behaviors. And so to see this article close to home, and to see local community members calling out parents for assumed lack of parenting, was shocking to me, because you and I are of the belief that parents are sending us the best that they have. And also, like, no parent is perfect, and situations arise, and everyone has moments they wish they handled differently. So to see these comments really gave me pause and made me wonder, like, what teachers would think and feel reading that, and what parents think and feel.
Well, and there was like a real emphasis kind of on like punitive discipline consequences. And that didn't set well with me. But then I really thought back to this earlier version of me. Mm-hmm. And like when I started teaching, sometimes I would think, oh, if I just could take that kid home for 1 week, they'd come back a new kid. Right.
Yeah.
And I even have to admit, like, when we adopted our daughters, they were 4 and 6 at the time, and they had been in foster care. And I kind of thought, I'm just going to bring them home. I'm going to give them a warm bed, plenty of food, lots of love, and firm boundaries, and we're going to be good to go. Like, I thought it'd be rocky for a little bit, but once we all adjusted, we'd be good to go. And the truth is that's not how it went. And I often say, like, trauma doesn't play fair. And what I mean by that is, you know, I thought lots of love, providing for kids, firm boundaries, and then things would be quote unquote just fine, right? And it's just not like that, because there's so much more happening than just, oh, that child is entitled or they haven't ever learned to follow the rules. There's a lot more happening in that.
For sure. And I think it's important, one, to acknowledge that there are lots of reasons for dysregulation and that you and I are coming at this from a trauma lens, a lens of kids who have experienced trauma. And also, like, behaviors present in a variety of ways because of different life experiences, and understanding the different ways that bodies present their trauma, the different trauma responses kids can exhibit, can help you to support them in those moments where they're experiencing those trauma responses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of research statistics that are coming out here in the last 5, 6, 7 years. So, but that's showing that there's more and more kids coming from family structures that have been disrupted. And like there's lots of reasons for that. And that's not it's not a judgment. It's something like the statistic is that 89% of students coming into kindergarten had some kind of disruption in their family structure. And so we know, like, from our understanding of how kids learn, when there's a disruption, and it can be anything. I mean, it can be, you know, a family member passed away, like a lot of things outside of our control. So I just want to be really sensitive to that. That's part of life, right? Like, it's not we've done something wrong. It's just simply part of life. But what happens for kids when they've experienced that disruption is there's some changes that happen in their mind, in their brains.
Yeah, at a fundamental level, their brain is changed. And as teachers, we get to come alongside them and understand what's happening and then help them to heal and to grow. And at a fundamental level, their brain has changed because of the life experience. And we get to be a part of helping their brain function through that and heal from that, or learn how to compensate it.
Yeah. And like, just this idea of like parents need to be better.
Yeah.
It's not helpful, and it's not going to do anything that will position kids to learn. But what can help is, as teachers, if we begin recognizing some trauma responses.
Right.
And so I just know, like, for me, when our daughters moved in, I really believed, like, firm boundaries, lots of love, fill their needs, we're going to be good to go. And then I began seeing some things that it was confusing. Like, it just didn't fit. It wasn't how things were supposed to go. And I think we see those in our classroom. So I'd like for us to talk through some trauma responses and some that we've heard, right? So probably most of us are familiar with, like, flight, fight, or freeze. So fight, flight, and freeze are three common trauma responses. But let's talk about what it looks like in your kindergarten classroom. With kindergartners. Yeah. Okay. So something that might trigger a trauma response is, let's say a student, they're working, they're doing some work, some independent work. It could be writing. It could be math, problem solving, Play-Doh, and unstructured play. It could be anything. But let's say they ruin something. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is this a stretch for the imagination?
No, that happens all the time.
Okay. And so you go up to them and maybe you're like, hey, what's happened? Why'd you ruin that?
Mm.
So if a student freezes, what might they look like?
So sometimes when they're frozen, they just freeze, right? They're not going to respond verbally. They're not moving. They're not engaging in what was just happening, and they're not going to turn and engage with you. And often the best thing to do is just protect that. They need to process through what's happening in their brain. They're not, they're in a freeze response, so they're not going to engage in a more dangerous behavior after, necessarily. And so the best thing to do is to like be there with them and like occasionally in a calm, like monotone voice, like, you're safe and I'm here. I'm ready to talk when you are. And like at some point their brain will be able to access that auditory processing and they'll be able to engage in that with you. And they might not know why they ruined the other kid's Play-Doh creation. They might not know why that just happened. And the reality is, why doesn't necessarily matter. You need to help them get grounded back into the kindergarten classroom and like know what's happening around them so that their hippocampus can remember that they're in the present day experience.
Let's say same scenario, right? But a student responds with a flight response. What would that look like?
They run, and they usually in schools, they call them elopements. Mm-hmm. They elope. I've had a variety of elopers. Some kids run far and will run out of the building and run and hide. Some kids will run to a familiar place that feels safer to them. So if someone ruined their creation or they unintentionally ruined another child's creation and then are like afraid, right? They're in a fear response and they're flying. They're in flight. They go. They disappear because they think that's the safest option.
So I was sitting here thinking, like, would I qualify this as a flight response? Sometimes I think like the hoodie goes up.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll like go underneath a table. Like, you know, so they haven't actually left the classroom, but they're still, to me, that's a flight response.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like I'm getting out of this situation.
A lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really important to acknowledge that as a flight response, because it's like removing yourself from the situation. And that could be in a level of, they're in a level of healing where they don't need to fully escape the scene, but they still aren't sure how to process yet what just mm-hmm. happened.
Yeah. I would see it a lot with our son who we adopted just before his 8th birthday. We might be having a conversation and he would just pull his hoodie up and like cross his arms and kind of like, he's still there, right? He's still there, but I'm like, we're not accessing any rational thought at this point. And it's so hard. Like, we want to be like, come back to the table. Let's have this conversation, or, you know, fix this thing that you just ruined. But recognizing that's not going to help because we're in a trauma response. Another real common one that we see is fight.
Yeah.
What might that look like?
So if a kid just ruined someone else's creation and the child whose creation was ruined is like, hey, like, Mrs. Burke, he just ruined my creation. Sometimes the response is like, I'm going to turn around and punch you. And they might punch you right in the face. They might push you out of your chair. And they get aggressive really fast. And they're not consciously thinking about, I'm trying to exhibit dominance here. But that's what their body is doing. They're like, I'm going to show you how strong I am so that you don't try to come and control me because I'm in control. And that's like a very, I can't come up, reptilian, like their reptilian brain is accessed and they're showing that they are stronger. And the best thing to do is like, just be the calm presence to co-regulate next to them and keep everyone else safe. Right. Like, so you're not trying to be punitive. You're not trying to punish or redirect that behavior in an extreme way, just to maintain safety. And they'll come down from it quickly if you don't try to engage in correction mm-hmm. right away.
So, Becca, one of the fight responses that I'll see oftentimes in older kids, and I'm curious if it – like, genuinely curious, Becca. Like, we haven't talked about this before. But they'll, like, verbally fight. So they might call names. They might argue. They might – does that happen in kindergarten, or is it more of a, like, a physical –
It developmentally, they're very physical. So mm-hmm. it is way more physical for the most part, as they learn to process through the physicality of things towards the end of kindergarten, I start to see more of the verbal stuff, or if they live in an environment where verbal attacks are typical. And also, because I've had such an age range at home, the younger kids tend to have the more physical responses in those early stages of dysregulation or in a fight response. Whereas the older kids, it's preemptive. The verbal stuff is preemptive. And so if you know that's what's happening, their fight is verbal at the beginning, you can kind of help them de-escalate before they hit the physical. But at the beginning, we didn't have any idea what we were doing. And it took us a while.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you said that, because it happens so fast, right? Yeah.
So fast.
They're at table, they're on structured play, everybody's getting along. And then there's, you know, as students, why'd you do that? And then boom, they're out the door. Yeah. And it's not because they're willful. It's because we're seeing a trauma response if we know what to look for.
Yeah.
So interesting. There's a few more that sometimes are a little like maybe we don't see them right away, or we might not have heard about them in our undergrad work, but where I'm starting to see these more and more. And one is sometimes it's referred to as a fawning or a friend mm-hmm. response. So do you see this?
I do in some kids. It's not as common in younger kids because it involves some higher level thinking, right? In order to access the fawn or friend response, you have to be able to read the people around you, especially the person that is causing the fear response in you, and know how they're expecting you to act, even if your body is feeling unsafe. And so that's a higher level thinking. You see it a lot in kids who live in chronic trauma, right? So you'll see this in kids who have pretty much lived in trauma outside of school their whole life. They're really great at fawn or friend. I've also heard it called feign, like they're mm-hmm. Feigning a response in order to just make it through a situation. But I don't see it often. And in some ways, like, I'm glad I don't see it often, because it's indicative of a higher level of trauma. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one of our kids that was, and I think like we see this, like different kids, they kind of have a go-to response. And I don't know if that is research-based or not. I just know, like, from my experience in our house, different kids had a go-to. And one of ours, it was like, that was definitely her response no matter what. It was just like, I'm gonna be friendly. I'm going to pretend like I'm doing what you want me to do, because this is the safest, easiest way for me to get out of a situation. And so we would see that. Another one that I think we see in older kids is this, like, fine. I'm fine. It's fine. We're all fine. I don't know if you're seeing that in kindergarten.
I think in some ways I do, but they're not as good at it, right? And so they'll be like fine for a few minutes and then they fall apart again. It's definitely a trauma response that is honed over time. So you see it in older kids, but also in kids who are in those more chronic situations. It's something we see a lot in our home, that everything's fine until it's not, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're seeing that trauma response of, like, clearly something's up, but you're saying you're fine and you're acting fine, but we can tell something's off. If you can help them to regulate, then they can come back down to baseline. But if you're not picking up on those, or like other people are around and you can't help them regulate as fast, you might start to see something like fight or flight or just higher levels of dysregulation.
Yeah. So this is just something that I think it's about being aware and beginning to pick up some of these responses, and understanding that it is happening in the reptilian part of the brain. And so they're feeling fear and they're responding in a way that's not logical. And that's what I noticed, like with our daughter, she just continued to respond in unexpected ways. And it wasn't because she was bad or willful or manipulative, but it was because her brain was altered by the trauma she had experienced. And these trauma responses were really giving us an indication of she's not feeling safe. And our response to her first has to be like helping her really access the part of her brain, the prefrontal cortex, where she would be able to make some rational decisions. And until she could, we really needed to back off. And so I think the same is true for what we're seeing in classrooms. But when we don't know to look for it, then it's just – then we think things like, oh, parents should be better. But speaking as a parent who, like, nobody could have been harder on me than what I was on myself, I really needed to understand, like, this is not a result of my parenting. It's a result of the trauma responses and the stress response that they're feeling.
Yeah.
I hope people will pick up our Sticky Hope Kit, because it's because of, like, this kind of thing that we put it together.
Yeah, I am so excited for our Sticky Hope Kit. And I just went through a pretty similar experience with one of my kids at home who was having a huge trauma response at school. And their school is like so beautifully understanding of trauma, and they've willingly come alongside us. And I feel like the Sticky Hope Kit has slowly been built based on like your experiences and my experiences, like in supporting teachers in working with our kids. And I really hope that we are able to impact teachers and bring them a little bit of hope and hug on those days that like things are really tricky and they feel like they're not understanding completely what's going on, but they know they need something more or something different. We're hoping we can be right there in it with them.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And if you'd like even more hope, check out our website, stickyhope.com, for tools, resources, and more. This episode was sponsored by Choice Literacy, a powerful hub of articles, videos, and resources for teachers by teachers.